Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You know, when I say that down at Fort Logan, they say, good evening. Thank you. I want you to open your Bible to Acts, the 14th chapter. And I'd like to begin this report about the things that God has been doing with the reading of this text. Paul and Barnabas have returned from their first preaching trip. It says, when they arrived at the church at Antioch, they gathered the church together, and they began to report all the things that God had done with them, and how he had opened a door of faith to the Gentiles. Well, I'm here to talk with you tonight about how God has opened a door of faith in Columbia, and he has allowed me the privilege of being able to participate in that in some small way. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Lord's work in Columbia. I know that some among you are fairly familiar. And where I want to begin is in the early stages of the work in Columbia. And I'll tell you a little bit of the history to begin with, and then talk with you a little bit more in detail about some of the things that we were able to participate in January, February, and March of this year. The work of God in Columbia actually began in the United States. And if you'll look on this map, I don't know how many of you can see that. I can't tell how big that is from back there. But I would hope that I had a pointer. Maybe I do here. Pardon me? The center. Okay, good. Good. Thank you. Bogota is the capital city of the country of Colombia, and you will notice here is Panama, and that kind of gives you a geographical idea about where the country of Colombia is. Venezuela is here to the east. Bogota is the capital city, and it is a big city. We're thinking in terms of 10 million people. The area of Caldas is really important in this report, as well as Cordoba and the Amazonas region here, because I was able to visit all three of these regions in January, February, and March. During that period of time, we spent 84 days and made 91 presentations. Phyllis and I arrived in the city of Bogota on January the 5th, I believe it was, and we used Bogota as our primary place of residence, rented an apartment there, and during the course of our three-month stay, we made three major 9 to 10 day trips, one to the Cordoba region, another to the Caldas region, and another to the Amazonas region. We made two weekend expeditions to the cities of Ibagué and La Dorada. We visited 26 different congregations, seven different congregations in the city of Bogota. In some of these congregations, I preached multiple times. Some, of course, we were only able to visit and preach one lesson. But not only did we visit Colombia, but while we were in the Amazon region here, we were able to cross over into both Brazil and to Peru and visit the Christians in those places. A lot of the work that we did was not formal preaching. When I say that, I'm saying from a pulpit standpoint. Sometimes in some of these regions, we were preaching to families and conducting Bible studies with couples and that sort of thing. Sometimes when people talk with me about my work in Colombia, they say, well, how many people did you baptize? Well, I'm not really going there to baptize people, as odd as that might sound, because the brethren there are very, very effective in teaching those kinds of fundamental things and baptizing people. My purpose in going is primarily for the benefit of being able to teach and to strengthen people that are already Christians. And you say, well, what did you talk about during this period of time? Over the period of since 2001, I've made approximately 20-some trips to Colombia. And during that time, I've spent anywhere from a few days to 3 weeks. And they've kind of typecast me as being kind of a specialist in marriage and family relationships. And sometimes when I go back, they say, talk to us again about marriage and family relationships. And then when I go to another congregation, somebody has told them that I'm the one that needs to talk on these subjects. And so they ask me to do so. So marriage and family relationships was some of the things that we talked about during this period of time. But in addition to that, we talked some about leadership and unity. We talked about the purpose of the Lord's church. We talked about faithfulness to the Lord and a variety of other things that you can only imagine in some of these circumstances, because some of the studies that we were conducting were quite offhanded. Maybe I had prepared a lesson to present, and maybe I was cast into a situation where there was a study that developed, and the topic had to be selected on a moment's notice. So that kind of gives you an idea about some of the things that we did. But I want to go back historically with you and recognize that this work in Colombia began about 40 years ago with this young man here named Carlos Restrepo. Carlos was caught here in the United States as a result of drug trafficking, and he was put in prison in Springfield, Missouri, where he met up with a man that had heard of Royce Chandler. His wife, I think, had met him in Orlando, Florida, and this man told Carlos about a Bible study course. And at this point, Royce is at the congregation in Danville, Kentucky, and he was preaching there. And so Carlos wrote a letter and received a Bible correspondence course from the church in Danville, Kentucky. He studied the course. He learned the truth. He asked somebody to come and baptize him, and they did. And these are some of the records of that, letters that he wrote to Royce Chandler, a letter that he wrote to Kelly Ellis, who was one of the elders at the Danville Church at the time, requesting that the elders send Royce Chandler to teach him further and to come to his country. They ultimately did do that, but the thing that really happened was that different individuals began to go, including Wayne Partain and these folks that you recognize right off the bat, Bob and Lita Crawley, in the early stages in December 1977. This is a photograph of Royce and Hope and Bob and Lita Crawley and Carlos and the lawyer who wrote a contract to rent a place to meet in the city of Bogota. Now, you have to understand that Carlos was a man of about 22 years old, and he started teaching his friends and his college associates and that sort of thing, and it began to blossom in a really big way. Nestor Bermudez was one of those that was converted in the early days there in Colombia, and he is still preaching, and I'll tell you a little bit more about Nestor in just a moment. But when we were there in January, Nestor took me by this building, and he says, this is the first building where the church started here in the city of Bogota. So I'm thinking that this is probably the building that photograph represented, that they were writing the contract to rent this particular place. It's located in the region of Chapinero. And from 1978 to 1982, there were about 250 people that were baptized. They established congregations not only in the city of Bogota, but also in Manizales and the city of Cali. And what Carlos was able to do is he was able to train a small core of men that continued the work and contributed to it in a good way. But Carlos, sad to say, became unfaithful, and as a result of personal problems, was no longer associated with the work after some years. But today, in 2018, there are about 100 congregations scattered all over the country of Colombia as a result of this beginning with him. Carlos passed away November the 12th in 2014 outside of a relationship with the Lord. Now, having said that, that kind of gives you a little bit of background. Now, here's what I'm struggling with, is what to leave out in this report. I've given you a little bit of the background. I could tell you a lot more about the background and the early stages of the work and people that were involved and all that sort of thing. But we really don't have time for that because I understand that I only have about 45 minutes. So I had to cut out some of that history, and I'm having to cut out some of the things that I'd like to tell you about that we did for 3 months. But we just can't tell you everything, obviously, so I'm going to give you kind of a thumbnail sketch of that. This is a photograph of Nestor and Clara Bermudez. Now, they live in the city of Bogota, and as I mentioned earlier, Nestor and Clara were some of the earlier converts that were have been influential over the 40 years. Nestor preaches with... I don't know what happened there. With the San Antonio Church primarily. Now, the San Antonio Church is a relatively good-sized congregation in the city of Bogota. There are about 100 people that meet with this group. This will give you an idea about the congregation. This is a photograph of part of the assembly. This is the other side of the assembly. Now, I want to call attention to their meeting place because this is one of the nicest meeting places of the Christians in Colombia. Not just in Bogota, but in Colombia. And the reason for that is that there was an individual here in Kentucky that made a sizable contribution, and they had been working to try to create their own facility and that kind of thing. They've got an architect that is in the congregation, and as a result of that one-time contribution, this congregation was one of the few that owns its own meeting place. And so what you're looking at here, they designed and built as a result of people's, Kentuckians' participation in the work there in Columbia. Preached several times at the congregation there at San Antonio. I have in the past and did during this period of time. The congregation at Gran America used to be very much a bit larger than it is now. But as a result of starting new congregations and Christians moving around to other congregations, it's a fairly small congregation now. Don't have any photographs of this congregation, but we did work with them at least on one night and one lesson. The congregation at Zipaquirá is north of the city of Bogota. Nestor goes here one day a week, and it is a relatively small congregation. This is their meeting place. They rent this facility right here, and there are about 35 Christians that meet together here in Zipaquirá. We visited with this congregation on multiple occasions. Back in the city of Bogota, we were able to visit with the congregation Ciudad de Bolívar. This is a photograph of part of the congregation there. I point out to you this young man... here, his name is Julio Cesar Teles, and he speaks English, and we've used him as a translator, and he is very adept at that. As a matter of fact, last summer when we were there, they were meeting in a different place, and the congregation numbered probably about 25 or 30 people. We went back this time, and they've got about 40 or 45, and they have moved and changed the place where they're meeting, and things are going well with that group of people. Also in the city of Bogota, there's a congregation known as Norte, which means the north. And so they identify themselves as Norte, the north congregation in the city of Bogota. We're able to visit with this congregation on multiple occasions, taught 2 series of lessons with this group of people. This is their meeting place. And also north of the city of Bogota, there is a congregation in this town of Sopó. This is the meeting place of the congregation at Sopó. I'm going to talk with you a little bit more about this congregation later, but just want to call your attention to this congregation because one of the things that we did while we were there is we moved back and forth from the city of Bogota. We preached with some congregations there, and of course we're living in Bogota. On a weekly basis, we would meet with congregations there, and then on a weekly basis also, Nestor would take us to Sopó and Zipaquirá, where he regularly conducted Bible studies during the week. And so he just kind of gave me the time and took us there and introduced us again to the congregations and that sort of thing, but the teaching was left up to us. So we did that for an extended period here, and then we were able to take a 9 or 10 day trip up to the Cordoba region. Now, I have been in this region before, but not with all of these different congregations that we were able to meet with on this occasion. If you will notice on this map, here is the Cordoba region, and we flew into Monteria and then traveled both south and north to additional towns. The first thing that we did after we flew into Monteria is we took a trip down to Terrealta, and there is a sizable group here, and they have their own meeting place and that sort of thing. You can tell that they come from a kind of, a charismatic type background. One family is primarily the influence in this congregation, the Madrid family. And there is a lady that's kind of the matriarch of the family. And she has a number of children, including daughters and sons. And the sons preach. And one of the sons preaches at the congregation here at Terrealta, while the other has been living in the city of Bogota and has started a congregation down there. But that's not all he's doing. He's traveling in different places, establishing congregations up here in this north region. And he's the one that I'm talking about. His name is Fernando. And they were very hospitable to us, as this is one of the other sons, and this is the matriarch of the family that's influential and, if I'm not terribly mistaken, has taught her whole family the message of the gospel. This man is Jorge Gaitan. Now, Jorge was also one of the early converts to Christianity in Colombia. He, along with Nestor, have been there for the whole time, and you will notice that Nestor and Jorge are about the same age. Jorge's a little bit younger. So what that tells you is that these young men that were 40 years ago, 20, 21, 22 years old, are now in their almost 60s, or maybe a little over 60, kind of like me. And they used to be young men, but they've been there for the whole time. And when you look at some of these photographs, what you see is a lot of people in that age category, because what they were doing is they were converting their friends in college and that kind of thing, okay? And now even when I would go over there, I would think, you know, how come everybody here is so young? And then it dawned on me that that's the reason why they were. Because they were converting their friends, and these people did not have parents that were Christians. Catholicism is the predominant religion in the country of Colombia, and their parents usually were from that kind of Catholic background, and so they did not have the privilege of identifying their parents with Christianity. This is the congregation at Terrealta. It asked me to preach there and talk about marriage relationships, and you can kind of give an idea about the size of the congregation here. This is one of the Madrid brothers. He is the one that is the primary speaker and teacher there in the congregation at Terrealta. Again, the Madrid family. It's interesting that intergenerationally, it influences the community in a powerful way. Mom was converted, and now she's converted her whole family, and now there's a congregation, and they're working in the community, and they're converting people right and left. While we were there in Terrealta, there was a guest that had come to the meeting, and she asked us if it would fit in with our schedule to come to her town and make a presentation one night. Well, we had one night that didn't have anything on the schedule, and it was on the way to where we were going, and we could spend the night there. She invited us to spend the night at her house, and it was in the city of Chinhu, and they were working to get a congregation started there. In the afternoon, after we arrived there about lunchtime, she fed us lunch and all that kind of thing. And in the afternoon, she and her mother went out in the neighborhood with flyers that they had created, and they passed out these flyers. And then in the evening, there was a group of, well, you see about 20 people there that assembled in her backyard. They strung up some lights in the backyard there, and this was our meeting place. We conducted a study there. Most of the people that were there had never heard the message of the gospel before. And while we were there, after the study, oftentimes it involves a question and answer period afterwards. And they were asking me questions. And I quote, this is the question that one man asked me. He said, "Does God forgive people who kill people? Does God forgive people who have killed people?" And my response to that was, is my understanding is that the power of the cross is sufficient even to pay the penalty for that sin. Well, the next day he was baptized in a farm pond by Fernando Madrid. That kind of gives you an idea about the kind of context and some of the experiences that are so rich in this kind of an environment. Does God forgive people who kill people? I didn't ask him why he was asking that question. I assumed that he had a good motive. From there, we journeyed to Larica. We're still in the Cordoba region. I've been to this congregation once before. Carlos Correa is the preacher there. He has four girls. This is three of them. And this is his mother. And his wife is not portrayed here because she was away in another city. She had a sickness and living with her parents for a while, getting medical attention. But this is the place where Phyllis violated what she said that she was going to do. When you go to Columbia, you have a variety of different experiences. And part of that involves eating meals with folks. And the food in Columbia is a little bit different than it is here in Lexington, Kentucky. And Phyllis said, "I don't think that I can eat a fish with the head on it, with the eyes looking back at me." Well, she found out that it could be a pleasurable experience because Carlos's mother made fish, fried it with the head on, and we really enjoyed it. So that's just one of the cross-cultural kinds of experiences that you can have. Now, I have to tell you a little bit about this young lady here. She's interested in coming to Kentucky. I think she would go about anywhere that she could learn English and experience a different culture and that kind of thing. I said, "Well, do you have a visa?" She said, "No." I said, "Well, the first thing that you have to do if you're going to come to Kentucky is you have to get a visa. And if you get a visa, then you call me and we'll talk about coming to Kentucky." This is the congregation at Larica. It's probably about 50 people. Now, it is hot in this Cordoba region. Now, when I say hot, when you go outside, if it's 95, that's about what it is here. You will recognize that there is no air conditioning in this meeting place. And, you know, we were able to rent a hotel room where we did have air conditioning in the evening, but it is very hot in this region. Now, in Bogota, the temperature is great because you're in the Andes Mountains and it's very comfortable and you really enjoy that. But then when you go out here in these lower regions, you need to recognize that Colombia is about 4 degrees off the equator. Okay? So when you go out in the coastal regions and that kind of thing, it's hot and it's humid and it's uncomfortable. and the meeting places do not have air conditioning, and sometimes they have a fan, sometimes they don't. And the fan usually maybe is not pointed in your direction. And you need to, I guess what I'm trying to say is you need to appreciate your facility. Because not only is it cool and comfortable in here and you can focus your attention on the things that I'm saying or a teacher is teaching you, but you don't have the road outside making noise that is interfering with your ability to hear. You don't have the uncomfortableness of hot temperatures and that kind of thing. But let me go back to that. The ladies love somebody that has blonde hair. They just think that's absolutely magnificent because you hardly ever see that in Colombia. And so they all wanted to take a picture with Phyllis, whose hair used to be blonde. From Lorica, we were able to go to the region called Manantial. Now, the first thing that you have to realize about going to Manantial is that you cross the river at Lorica, and the road gets worse. And when I say worse, I mean it's really bad. After you cross the ferry, and a Renault, that's probably, I don't know, I'm going to say about a 1970-some model. Now, these are tough cars, and this one had to be tough because we were going through really difficult terrain. Fit only really for motorcycles or traveling on a horseback, but the driver was able to get us there in good shape. But you're only making about 10 miles an hour. There's no air conditioning, okay? The road is very rough. When we, I don't know what happened here. When we got to Manantial, there was a group of Christians there. We met outside. We did the study. The fellow whose car you just saw there on the ferry said we got to leave right now because what he wanted to do is get back to Lorica before the sun went down, which we didn't do. But that was his anxiety about it. Now, later I learned that Manantial is, there's a level of safety risk in that region, although I've been there twice and I've never had any problems whatsoever. Back in Monteria, after we was able to visit with the congregation at Lorica and Manantial, we came back to the city of Monteria, and there's a new congregation there. Very new. Let me tell you a little story about this congregation. They were supposed to meet in the evening about 7 p.m. Well, we arrived at the meeting place, which was next door to someone's house, part of a residence. Their meeting place is indeed what used to be a residence, and there was no one there. We didn't know if we'd arrived at the right place or not. Looking at the address, we found out that we were at the right place, asked the neighbors, and they confirmed it. But at time for the meeting to start, there were about six or seven people there, and I thought, well, that's par for the course, I suppose, since this congregation has only been meeting for a month or two. And that's kind of what I was expecting, but they didn't start the worship assembly. They didn't start the service until later. Things kind of droned on, and we kept talking to people, and we didn't get the worship service started, and people kept coming. Finally, about a half hour, 20 minutes after time to start, they started the assembly, and people kept coming. Came time for me to preach. I preached for about 40 minutes, and during the course of the time, people were still coming. When I realized that I was getting ready to end my presentation, there were still people coming. And so I said to myself, what am I going to do here? And so I thought, well, if they're coming here at the last 10 minutes, I want to give them something. And so I kind of did a rewind, trying to summarize what I'd been saying and bring them up to date on some of the things that we had talked about relative to marriage, and then it concluded the lesson. But what I'm trying to say here is that they were not experienced of starting at any particular time. And sometimes that's the case in Colombia. You may be planning a worship assembly for 7 o'clock, and it doesn't start until 7:15. Now, in this case, it was about 7:25. with about seven people. When the assembly was completed, there were probably 35, 40 people there. And so we talked to them because this is coming up on Sunday, and I'm supposed to be there on Sunday. This is what time we're going to meet. We need everybody assembled here at the time that you're supposed to be here. I think it was maybe Friday night that this happened. So they were coming on Saturday. On Saturday night, about 40, 45 people showed up at the regular, at the appointed time. And then Sunday, the same thing. And they were listening enthusiastically as we talked with them about marriage. Now, many of them did not meet in the room of the meeting house. They were sitting outside because of the heat. And so you see Phyllis here. She's sitting outside. This is the street. Now, I want you to imagine all the road noise that is going on out here. There is no buffer to that. Motorcycles going up and down the street and that kind of thing as you're trying to conduct the study. It's very commonplace in Columbia. Most of these people were not Christians. Hardly any of them were Christians. And as we're talking about marriage, I came to realize that there were people in the group that were living together that were not married. And so this was fresh material for them. They hadn't heard things like this before. And at the close of the study, after we'd talked some about marriage, guess what one of the first questions was? Well, what about divorce? I said, I'm not even going to talk to you about divorce. I didn't come here to talk about divorce. We're talking about marriage. And if you're going to talk about divorce, we'll have to do that on another occasion. But we're talking about marriage, and we need to get these fundamentals down before we talk about anything else. So I just discarded that question, really. They ask unusual questions, questions that are different than the ones that we're accustomed to hearing. But you can see them all crowded around here listening and studying. Here's Fernando Madrid. He's starting this congregation. You see, he's from Terrealta, and his mother was the one that taught him. Came back to the Bogota area after being in the Cordoba region. Visited again with the congregation at San Antonio and the congregation at Sopo and the congregation at Zipaquirá. And then the next weekend, we went to the city of Ibagué, a bus ride of some distance from Bogota down to Ibagué. Riding in a bus in Colombia is not all that comfortable. But at Ibagué, there are two congregations there. This gentleman, and I reminded myself of his name this afternoon, and now I can't call it, is the preacher there at the downtown group. And I've visited this congregation multiple times. This is the Campos family. They have been very hospitable to us every time that we've been at Ibagué. We appreciate them very much. This is their meeting place. This is the congregation assembled, congregation of probably 45, 50 people. The other congregation has a preacher by the name of, I can't think of it, and I know it really well. But he's doing a really good work, and I met this young man many years ago when I made the first trip to Colombia. And before, at that time, he was not married. He's gotten married and now has three young boys. About 45 people in this group, too, in the city of Ibagué. Now, you say, well, they got two congregations there. Yes, but this is a city of about 600,000. Okay? They need more. Jorge Gaitan, very effective in English, translated for me and did some traveling with me. This is his wife, Christina. Very big supporters. Let me tell you a little bit about this young lady. She spent 3 months with us here in Kentucky trying to learn the English language better, wanting to be an airline stewardess, but she is about 1.5 inches too short, according to Colombian requirements. And she was really interested in all the vitamins that we could think of that might help her to grow just a little bit more. And but that didn't happen. But when we were there, we were able to reconnect with her, and we found out that she is indeed working for Avianca Airlines, not as a stewardess, but she's working in the airline industry and is traveling extensively, and told us a little bit about some of the things that she was able to experience. She is not a Christian yet, but in the places that she travels, London or New York or Chicago, what she has been doing is making sure that she finds a place to worship in those cities. And so we gave her information to Nestor, and Nestor's information to her, and hopefully that will be followed up on, and she can begin a relationship with the Lord that's different. We traveled then to the Caldas region. This is, see right here, Manizales is the capital of the Caldas region. This is the coffee region, very beautiful area. This was our main contact in the Caldas region, Oscar Arias and his family. Involves a bus ride from Manizales, Bahia Maria area, to the city of Nera, to another congregation. This is Mauricio Zapata and his family that work with the congregation there in Nera. This is the congregation in Nera. Now, there are preachers in this area, about five or six of them, and they have agreed that they're going to work together and be supportive to each other. And so in this group, this man is a preacher, and this man is a preacher, and this young man is beginning to preach. And what they're doing is they're all meeting with the congregation at Nera to be a support to them and encourage that congregation, because you can see it is very small. Carlos Julio traveled with us to the Caldas region and translated for me extensively there. This is a photograph of the congregation at Bahia Maria, just outside of Manizales, also in the Coffee or Caldas region. Oscar Arias preaches with the congregation there in Bahia Maria. This is the congregation at Santa Rosa, also in the Caldas region. Carlos Anao is the preacher there. They're doing fantastic things. This is a congregation of about 65 people. They were able to travel with us to a little town in the coffee region called Anserma. This is the group that kind of traveled with us on that day. And this is Carlos Anao, the preacher at Santa Rosa there. In addition to traveling to Anserma, we traveled to the city of Chinchiná. And this is a small congregation there. See, Alirio Torres is the preacher there. This kind of gives you an idea about the view in the coffee region, the mountains of the Andes. This is the congregation at Chinchiná. Notice that everybody sits in plastic chairs. This is the congregation in Anserma, a very small group. I had talked with some of the congregations about the subject of leadership in the Caldas region. And on the way home one night, they said, tomorrow we're going to the congregation in Anserma. They said, we would prefer that you did not talk about leadership there. They said, they will not understand what leadership is. And they said, this is a group of farmers. I said, I live amongst a group of farmers. They're all college educated. I said, can these people read? And they said, most of them can't. I said, gentlemen, you need to be forthright with me in telling me what the circumstances are. I do not want to embarrass these people by asking them to turn to Matthew chapter 19 and let's read verses 1 through 5 if they cannot read Matthew chapter 19 verses 1 through 5. Be forthright with me so that I can approach these people with respect and not embarrass them and that sort of thing. I said, when you tell me they're a group of farmers, that doesn't tell me a whole lot. My next door neighbor was educated and he has a degree from the University of Kentucky in agriculture. Can he read? Absolutely. What you're telling me is these people cannot read. You're going to have to tell me that. Don't tell me that they're just farmers, because that doesn't tell me a whole lot. And so what I did is I borrowed from the model that I see evidenced by Jesus as he spoke to people that may have not been able to read, and he told stories. And I thought, I'll tell a story. So I told a story about three sons on the basis of Luke chapter 15. We know it as the parable of the prodigal. And you say, three sons? I thought there were only two. Well, one of the sons told the story. So we talked about those three sons and the different perspectives that each one of them had about the father. And they were quite receptive. While they may not have understood about leadership, they understood, and they were very responsive to this story about three sons and their perspective about their father. And I appreciated that. This young man that is standing behind the microphone right here lives in Santa Rosa, and he travels by motorcycle about an hour and a half or 2 hours on Sunday to be able to meet and give instruction to this group of people. These are some of the leaders in the area of Caldas: Oscar Arias, Carlos Sanao, Alirio Torres, Mauricio Zapata, Robinson Santa, and Edgar Ruiz. And of course, Julio Cesar is from Bogota, and he was there translating for us. Now, if you'll notice, what we're doing is we're going out, we're preaching, and then we're coming back to Bogota. When we come back to Bogota, we're preaching in Bogota, and then we'll go back out to another place. So while we were back in Bogota, we were able to get and visit with the San Antonio Church, the Sapo Church, the Zapaquidá Church. And then next weekend, we went down to La Dorada. It's also in the Caldas region, but a different part of the Caldas region. We did not have access to it in the previous trip. This young man and his wife are the leaders in that congregation, and that gives you an idea about the size of this congregation. In the month of March, we came back to Bogota, again visited with the congregations in Bogota, Zapaquidá, Sopó. In Bogota, we visited with the Ochenta Church, Garces Navas Church, the San Antonio Church, and the Norte Church. And then at the end of the month of March, we were able to go down to the Amazonas region. This is about a two-hour flight from Bogota, straight south as far as you can go in the country of Colombia. And we were able to visit with the congregations in Leticia and some congregations or Christians in Peru and also in Brazil. To give you an idea about where Leticia is. Here's Bogota. Here's Leticia. We're back in. This is the meeting place of the Garces Navas congregation in Bogota. This is the Garces Navas congregation. San Antonio. These are some of our favorite people in the San Antonio congregation. They have a daughter that attends Florida College, is finishing up her bachelor's degree, just graduated with her bachelor's degree there. And is giving consideration to the University of Kentucky for a medical degree. So if you see a Colombian that shows up here in a year or so, give me a call. They were very happy that it was they were able to celebrate Phyllis's birthday with her. This couple are absolutely fantastic. They're members of the congregation there at Sapo. He is an artist. And you can see that he has decorated his little farm here with all kinds of artistic design. Very creative. This is his daughter, Ava Sophia. And his wife, Deanna, and Ava Sophia are planning on being here in Kentucky toward the end of the month. This was an interesting experience, just kind of as a sidelight. They celebrated Phyllis's birthday. There is a North American lady that is a member of the congregation there at Sopo from Alabama. Speaks perfect Alabamian. And somebody told Phyllis, that it was Helen's birthday and that she should come prepared to celebrate Helen's birthday. Well, Phyllis goes down to the restaurant and gets a cake and that kind of thing, and little did she know that they were celebrating her birthday instead. This is Helen. And this is the congregation at Sopo. Cesar Romero. Congregation at El Rincon. We've known these people for a number of years, Henry and Sonia Perez. The congregation at El Rincon is about 100 people, one of the larger congregations there in the city of Bogota. These are some of our favorite people. Anybody who wants to know how to practice hospitality, Pedro Pablo can do it. They own a restaurant and have owned various restaurants and always invite us to eat with them. This is the congregation at El Rincon in Bogota. Another congregation in Bogota, very small, just beginning, Libertad. This is the meeting place of the Libertad congregation. And this is the congregation there at Libertad. The Norte Church, we're able to make another series of presentations there before going down to the Amazon region. This is Oscar Arias that made arrangements for us to go to the Amazon, and Julio Cesar, our translator. Flying into Leticia, this gives you an idea about the Amazon River. Trees as far as the eye can see in every direction. We went out of Leticia, four-hour boat ride up the Amazon region, up the Amazon River to a city called Caballacocha in Peru. Gives you an idea about what the boat ride was like. Welcome to Caballacocha. Caballacocha is a town of about 2,600 people. Airplane comes in here once a week. Now, all the other traffic that comes here is by boat. You see no cars in Caballacocha. It's hard to say that a congregation exists in Caballacocha. There are some families that are Christians. This couple here that we're studying with on the street are not Christians, but as we talked with them, studied with them a particular passage, and one of the men asked, said, "Well, what did you learn from this study?" And his response was, "I need to be thankful to God for the provision that He's made for me." Well, he's not a Christian, but I'm suggesting that he's headed in that direction. While we were in Caballacocha, Julio Cesar does a little video that he posts on Facebook from time to time. And while in Caballacocha, we were there at the town square, and he's filming one of these little videos that he's going to post on Facebook. He's doing it all in Spanish, and so I don't know what he's really talking about at all. But this man came up out of the crowd, off the street, and began to talk with Julio Cesar. And when I had an opportunity to talk with Julio Cesar, he said, the video that I was making and the passage that I was talking about Zacchaeus. He said, this man who was standing here and he was listening to me talk about Zacchaeus and the passage associated with Zacchaeus. And he said, he came up to me and he said, "Well, I've always felt like Zacchaeus," and said, "I know that story from the Bible." And he said, "Because I am a small man." Well, they began to study and talk with him about his obedience to the gospel. He decided he wanted to be baptized and took him down to a spring. And he was baptized. In Caballacocha, when it rains, it pours. They had planned for us to speak in the city park, street preaching, what we would call street preaching. And the night that we were planning on doing that, it poured down rain and we were washed out. But the next night, we planned the same thing for 6 p.m. At about 5:30, it was pouring down rain just like this. And then it stopped. And we were able to meet at the city park and do some street preaching. And you can see there are probably 20 people on this side that are assembled there listening. And there was a study that was developed out of that. And we also learned about a radio station there in Caballo Cocha. And this man is a Christian, and this is his mother, and she owns the radio station. And the next thing we knew, they were able to preach on the radio. This also is in Caballo Cocha. These people were associated with an evangelical kind of church, but were dissatisfied there, and they'd been doing some studies with them and invited us to come and talk with them. And notice the floor in this house. Most of you are not acquainted with having a dirt floor in your house. Across the street from Leticia is the country of Brazil. Now, you're accustomed when you go from one country to the next to have to get your passport stamped. Well, you don't have to do that. When you go over into Brazil from Leticia, you just walk across the street. This is the congregation in Leticia. And these are the men of the congregation in Leticia. And notice that Julio and I are two of the five. This is the congregation at Leticia. This is one of the families that we were able to study with. And the preachers there were really interested in this young woman and her coming to the assembly. She said, they said, you need to talk with her about coming to the assembly. So when I saw what the situation was, she talked about her relationship with the Lord and that kind of thing. And I said, it must be really difficult for you to go to the assembly. And she said, yes, it is. I said, do you have to walk when you go? She said, yes. And I said, do you generally go by yourself with these five children? And she said, yes. I said, that must be really difficult for you to do that. I said, probably when you get up and you think about going to worship on Sunday morning or something, you've got all these children to get ready, and you've got to make a mile and a half or 2 mile walk to get there with these five children. They're all small. She said, you're the only one that understands. She said, I'll be there Sunday. And she was. But I want to tell you a little bit about this young lady in just a moment. This is one of the best Bible studies that I had the whole time that I was in Columbia, in my judgment. It was a group of ladies. I'd never been asked, I don't think, to teach a ladies' class, but I was there. And they met. This is kind of the matriarch of the group here. I met at her house in the backyard, and all of these young ladies assembled for a Bible study. Let me go back a minute. This young lady reads the text of Scripture, and she asks good questions. And I was really impressed with her questions and her willingness to study. But they were all very powerful students of Scripture and very knowledgeable. This is the city of Caballo Cocha. This is their meeting place right here. Notice, you probably can't tell, but this is a bar next door. When we were conducting the Bible study with the men, you could hardly hear yourself. Okay? This is inside the meeting place at Caballo Cocha, or Leticia, I'm sorry, with the congregation there. This young man is Edouard. He works there with the group. Let me tell you just a little bit about this situation. This young lady is 14 years old. They asked that we go there to do a Bible study with her and her mother and her sister. but with her in particular because she had just obeyed the gospel. We did the Bible study. Now you need to understand the level of economic depression, I'll call it, here in this area, in Laetitia. They told me before we went there, they said her husband died as a result of a rat bite. They said they used to have a son, and he also died as a result of rat bite. So now it's the mother and the two daughters. There's another daughter that is a little older that has already left home. Give you an idea of the living circumstances. The lady's name is Anna Melendez. This is a relatively nice house, newer house in this region, but some of them are like this. And it's on the edge of the Amazon River, and you will notice that they're all built at an elevated place because the Amazon River, when it floods, it comes under these houses and back out. You can't really tell from this photograph, but I had a particular reason for taking this photograph. I think that there was somebody taking a shower in this house, and it's on these stilts, and the water was running out through the floor here and down the stilts, and so there was no sewer in this area. This is back at Caballococha. The brethren kept telling me we're going to Yumarisu. So we went to Yumarisu, and the next day they said we're going to Tabatinga. Well, this is over in Brazil, and I thought we were going to do different places. And like I mentioned, when you go from Laetitia to Brazil, you just walk across the border. And here is the border. And this is one of the vans that we took to Tabatinga or Yumarisu. And when we got there the second day, I realized that Tabatinga and Yumarisu are in effect the same place, which was interesting. This is the meeting place of the church in Yumarisu, Tabatinga. On the first visit, they just wanted to ask questions. And so this is representatives of the congregation asking questions. This is the congregation on Sunday as we met with. Now, in Yumarisu, Tabatinga, we're in Brazil. And you think, well, in Brazil, you would speak Portuguese. Well, not so here. Most of the people, of course, in Brazil do speak Portuguese, but these are indigenous people, which means that they have their own indigenous languages, and there are lots of them. And so what we're doing here, if you'll notice, I'm speaking in English. Julio Cesar is also skilled in Portuguese, and he is translating into Portuguese, and Armando is now translating into the other language. Say it that way, translating into the other language. I had an opportunity to visit at a library here while we were at Laetitia, and looking through the library books, and I found all these Bibles. And I started pulling them off the shelf because I knew that they weren't in English for sure. I started looking, and they had told me this. Now, she said, when he starts translating, said, just wait. It takes a lot of words in the indigenous language to translate just a brief passage in the English. So when you go there, you're going to have to speak short. You can't have a long lesson. You're going to have to speak very briefly, and you're going to have to speak very simply. So as I pull those Bibles off the shelf, here's John 3:16 in the English. Here's John 3:16 in the indigenous language. So lots of words to say what we would use a very few words to say. Okay. Now, let's be finished. What I want to say to you is thank you. Because you have contributed financially to make this possible. When we read that passage earlier from Acts chapter 14... It talked about what God had done with Paul and Barnabas and amongst the Gentiles. This is what God has done in Colombia. Over 40 years. Now, of all the people that have been converted, are they all faithful? No. A lot of them have fallen away. A lot of them have quit. A lot of them have become unfaithful through entering back into the world and involving themselves in a variety of different kinds of sin. But God has continued to work. And the interesting thing is, as we look at this story, we understand that God continues to work. And sometimes He does it through people that will not be faithful the rest of their life. And sometimes He's working through people that are not even Christians. But God is at work. He works especially through His people that recognize what He's trying to accomplish and give themselves to that. What I want you to recognize is that you are a participant in that. One of the young men over there that we helped to support from Fort Logan, I said, you need to send your report especially to every single one of the elders at Fort Logan. What I mean is, you need to send a personal email to each one of these elders every month. He said, why would I do that? I said, well, this is the way that we approach what we're doing here. One of the reasons why I'm here is to check out what you're doing. Because we approach this from the standpoint of you being a member of our family. And we want to know about you. We want to know about your financial circumstances. We want to know about your family. We want to know about the work that you're doing. Of course, he doesn't speak English all that well. He was kind of scratching his head and kind of fell silent. And Julio Cesar said, do you understand what he's telling you? We want a personal relationship with the people. That's why I'm here tonight. Because you want a personal relationship with me. Because you want to know what I'm doing when you send me a check. We're all in the family of God together. And if we can serve the purpose of God together, wonderful. We need to energize each other. Not everybody has the opportunity to do what I'm doing. Not everybody has the opportunity to do what some of these other people are doing. But I'm here to tell you that these people appreciate you, and they appreciate your relationship with the Lord. And if they were here tonight, and there are in a way as they're speaking through me, what they want me to say to you is thank you for your help. You do not understand the economic circumstances that they experience. I don't expect you to, but you do understand the value of the gospel, and they do too. And it's changing their lives, and they're in the business of helping other people to come to know the Lord and see God's work, not only in them, but in other people's lives. It's a fantastic thing to realize that you're being used by God in whatever small way, whatever capacity that He's given you. But He's given you capacity, and you've participated in that. And I want to say I'm thankful, and I know that they want me to tell you that they're thankful to you too. The opportunity is yours tonight if you're not a Christian. But you've come to learn and know the value of life in the Lord. You're knowledgeable about what God has done for you for the forgiveness of your sins, and you'd be willing tonight to come forward in this audience and acknowledge that and confess your belief in what He has done for you and your willingness to place your trust in what He has done. You will be like these people who've done the same kind of thing. But it doesn't end there, does it? It's just the beginning. Now your responsibility is to live like the Lord wants you to and to serve the accomplishment of His purpose in working to evangelize and teach others because you're excited. And over 40 years, you can see what happened and how God worked through people who gave their lives to Him. and how he empowered them to accomplish great things. And they've taught their families and they've taught other people. And that's what you're doing. And I want you to understand that while I've told you this story tonight, I know that every single one of you out there has a story too. If that story is beginning in your relationship with the Lord, and you want to make a confession of your faith in Jesus Christ tonight, then we're going to sing a song here in a moment to encourage you to come forward and do that. If, on the other hand, you've fallen away from the Lord, gotten off track, perhaps tonight would be the time that you would repent, get back on track, begin again to serve His purpose. Serve the Lord all the way to the end. All the way to the end of your life. Give Him the best years. Give Him all the years. Would you do that? If so, come forward as together we stand and as we sing.